mean, I think that's in life. There are challenges.
Mm-hmm.
There are rewards. There are joyous moments. Mm-hmm. There are disappointing moments. I had all that when I was, you know, working in retail as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's just the roller coaster of life, you know. And I think whether you're, it's weight or something else.
Yeah.
We all have that.
Welcome back to another episode of Weighing In with Patrick, Eating After the Meeting podcast. For those of you who are listening, you are almost assuredly members of the local Rock Hill, South Carolina Weight Watchers community. And I would assume most of you attend the Saturday meeting, but if you don't attend the Saturday meeting, please feel free to share this with the folks to whom you attend a meeting with, whether that's here in Rock Hill or elsewhere. Welcome. And if you'd like to be on this podcast, feel free to send me a message at my inbox, weighinginwithpatrick@gmail.com. We would like to hear your story. We would especially like to hear your story if you're just starting fresh with Weight Watchers. Either this is your first time around or this is your 30th time around. Your perspective is valuable, no less valuable than that of someone who's been a lifetime member for 30 days or 30 years. It's all really good information for the listeners here. We would also like to get a better idea of who you are, where you come from, what your experiences have been throughout your life, all those circumstances that have contributed to you being the you who you are right now. It's usually an interesting walk. This is not necessarily a therapeutic podcast, though maybe some people find some therapeutic value in it, knowing that, hey, that sounds like me. Or, hey, that person tried something, I'm going to try something similar. And that's really kind of what we're hoping to accomplish with this particular podcast. Everybody gets to know and learn from the people that present themselves here. My name is Patrick Hall. Like I said, I attend the Saturday morning meeting here in Rock Hill. My wife and I, Courtney, we have been Weight Watchers dabblers for years and years and years. And since 2021, we have been complete converts. And we have our ups and our downs, and we like to think that we have more ups than downs. But we are, I guess you could say, we have decided we are going to be lifetime members regardless of whether or not we've hit our goal weight. Just because this seems to be the best path for us towards wellness. And I would invite you to think of yourself as a lifetime member if you have considered, maybe I need to do Weight Watchers the rest of my life, regardless of what your weight is, okay? That's important stuff. I think I kind of touched on that idea. I believe I touched on that with Johanna. That brings me to Episode 9, Part 1, Johanna Laverne, she and her partner Bruce, who I spoke with during Episode 8, Parts 1 and 2, both of those episodes are posted on the audio.com site, and you can access them, I believe, by going to audio.com/ Patrick-Hull. I believe that's how you get to it. Otherwise, you can find that link on the chat in Coach Sherry's section of the WW app. And really had a great time talking to both Bruce and Johanna. And in this particular conversation with Johanna that took place at their home, in, I guess, their game room slash hangout room. I call it a dining room just because I'm not as advanced as most people out there. If it has a table that you sit at, I think, oh, table, you must eat there. That it means it's a dining room. But they have a beautiful home, and it was a great, it was a really enjoyable experience being in their home, speaking to both of them one at a time, and listening to their stories individually, and hearing kind of their takes on their relationship and how WW contributes and how their relationship contributes to their WW journey. It was all really good stuff. And in this particular episode, part one of my conversation with Johanna, she tells her origin story for the most part, both family and career, and how she found her way to her partner, Bruce, and what has kept her, I guess, moving towards down the path of wellness. And I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. It's some really good stuff that she shares. And afterwards, I actually have a question that came from to me from my inbox, the Weighing In with Patrick at gmail.com inbox. It was the first non-spam mail that I have received. And so the person had asked to remain anonymous, and they shall remain anonymous. However, my comments, the question and my comments will follow part one of my interview with, rather my discussion with Johanna. And so we fired up the Microtinis and got into the conversation. So here's part one with Johanna. I hope you enjoy it, and we'll see you afterwards. Welcome back to episode 9 of the Weighing In podcast. I am your podcast Sherpa, Patrick Hull, and with me today is one Johanna Lavorne, and we know each other from the Saturday meeting in Rock Hill at 9 a.m., My wife, Courtney, and I tend to sit directly in front of Johanna and her partner, Bruce. And I think we have become rather strong acquaintances over this time. Would you agree or disagree?
I would agree with that. Okay. Yeah, we look forward to seeing you every week. Yeah,
and we notice when you're not there, right?
As do we.
And so we are here in your home, which is absolutely beautiful, by the way. And is this more your influence, the influence of Bruce, or a combination of the two, how it's decorated and set up and everything?
I think it's a combination of both of us over the years. Mm-hmm. You know, we've kind of melded our taste. But this piece right here is a piece that I actually designed on the wall.
I was going to say,
yeah,
love the barn doors.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Thanks.
Wow.
Thanks. We had it built because this room was a little long and mm-hmm. it was kind of a strange shape. And we thought, oh, this would be a great way to have extra storage. So
when you toured this house, was this room in particular, what did they tell you this room was supposed to be? Like, was this like a dining room or something?
It was like a sitting room. Some people made it a dining room, mm-hmm. but because it's an open floor plan, that dining room is kind of like out in the middle of everywhere. But this room was supposed to, it could be an office, mm-hmm. it could have been a bonus room, or it could have been, you could use it as a dining room or even mm-hmm. like a second living room in the South. A lot of people do that, but we like this idea of like putting our bar glasses and things in here and our, you know, we have wine in here and we have, if we have a small, just a few people, we'll have them over in here and we hang out or we play games in here, do our puzzles in here, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
I would say that the style that the Lavornes seem to access is elegant, but does not instill fear.
Well, good.
That you don't,
we want you to be comfy.
Yeah, you don't feel like I can't touch anything, but at the same time, it is quite a striking home.
Well, thank you. Absolutely. Thank you.
It should be in a magazine.
Oh, we just were in a magazine.
Oh, tell us all about it.
We were the family of the month in November for the Life and the Bridge magazine, which is a magazine that's tied to our area that we live in Fort Mill. And we got to be interviewed by a really lovely lady from the magazine, and they took some pictures, and it's out all around now if anybody wants to see it.
That's great.
Yep.
Wonderful. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Did you get nominated for that?
No, actually, I had called to make a suggestion about something. They were looking for ideas for something, and I had submitted an idea. And the writer and I were talking back and forth, and she finally said, hey, you know, we interview all kinds of families. Would you like to be interviewed? And I said, well, you're not that interesting. You know, we moved here to retire. And so she said, but we like all different kinds of families. And the more I talk to you, the more I like you. And I think you might be an interesting interview. Mm-hmm. So she came and talked to us, and they decided to make us the November family.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's great. So you are our guest on episode 9.
I love that number.
Number 9.
Yeah.
What did you think when you first heard that the 9 a.m. meeting of Rock Hill WW had its own podcast, even though it's not affiliated with WW?
I was interested in it. And what I found is I look forward to it now, because I find that when I take a walk or something, I listen to it. And it's like an additional segment of support for me. You know, like Saturday you leave and you're pretty pumped. Sunday, Monday, all good. By Tuesday, Wednesday, you start like you could use a little something. I could use a little something. So I take a walk. I save that podcast for my walk.
That's great.
And I don't stop until it's over.
Well, we at the Wing and with Patrick Podcast Home Office thank you for your ongoing support.
You're welcome. I hope more people followed. I think it could be useful for many people, whether they're in WW or not.
It is definitely a labor of love. I really like doing it, and just being able to chat with people that I find interesting, that have great stories that I think we all can connect with.
Yeah.
You know, that's,
I think it's cool. You can glean a little nugget from everybody, no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that makes your day easier, or makes a challenge that you've had a little less daunting.
Yep.
Yeah.
What part of the country and where specifically were you raised?
Well, I was born in Germany, and my parents came over when I was a baby. And then we went to North Carolina, and then we went back to Germany when I was in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
So year four, fourth grade-ish that time. Fourth grade. And then we stayed there until I was almost 16.
Wow.
Came back.
In Germany until almost 16?
Mm-hmm.
In between the ages of what and 16?
11, 12 and 16.
Wow.
Yeah, 11 and 16. Yeah.
Were you able to speak German prior to that?
I could speak a little bit. My mom was really nervous about it at the time they came over in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
People weren't terribly open to Germans. They were like, you moved here, you speak our language, that kind of thing, especially in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mom said, we only speak English when we're out, you know. And so she spoke to me in German a little bit. I knew a few words. When we got back to Germany, when I was in elementary school, my grandfather, who's German, stood at the door when we arrived and said, hey, you need to understand German. Your family is, half of your family is German. So when you can speak it, I will give you 100 marks, which was like, you know, $50. I thought that was the world. I immediately started watching German Sesame Street and learning colors and numbers and things like that. And then the school that I went to, all of our classes were in English and in German.
Oh.
So you go to one class for, say it was English and you had English, maybe your home ec class was in German, something else would be in English, maybe science, your math class might be in German, so we kind of went back and forth all day. We were kind of immersed in a lot of that.
On the one hand, you've got your German family who are from Germany.
Mm-hmm. And I had an American family
and
too.
You had all the Yanks you went over there with.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of bouncing back and forth, it would seem, between cultures.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
It was interesting. I think I got to see the best of a lot of different things that many people don't get to see.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful for that part of my life. Mm-hmm. I got to learn a second language, which a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
You know, and I got to experience different kinds of food and holidays and the way that you observe things and so for me, that was lucky, and it also made me a little bit more adventurous, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I was interested, that prompted me to be interested in going to the Netherlands or going to Spain or going to France or, you know, something like that. Yeah.
So your German family, did they have any that you can remember, or maybe they still have them, preconceptions or ideas about American culture or Americans in general, they're like, yeah, that's not entirely true. Or that's not entirely accurate. Let me see if I can shed some light on that for you. Anything like that? Or maybe they just didn't.
I don't think so. And I even don't think so now. We were separate. Well, when we lived there, we saw them every now and then. We didn't see them terribly often. And then there was a long period of time where we didn't see each other. We, my husband and I were here. And well, I was in college here and then working. And then I met my husband. So it had been 30 plus years that before I had that I hadn't been in Germany. When I came back, I really got to, I'm just now getting to know them, you know. So I went back in August for a week and a half, and I spent like a day with every single person. So it was really neat.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody had any preconceived notions about Americans being so different. They think they know that America is huge and that it is a land of opportunity for many people. So I think that's
so mostly positive outlook.
Yeah, mostly positive. I think everybody wanted to go to New York and see how far that is from where we live, or Vegas and see how far that is from where we live, that kind of thing. Like, is it really that far? You know, it's like, yeah, it's 8 hours on a plane to get to the West Coast. So,
so as an 11-year-old showing up in Germany and being around German culture, what did you notice about German culture? Like, wait a minute, they don't have that in the United States. What's that about?
My favorite thing was the sweets. And that was different kinds of cakes and cookies. And then they had something called Kaffeestund, which is like an hour in the afternoon where people typically will have a cup of coffee, a piece of cake or a piece of chocolate or, you know, a cookie or something like that.
Yeah.
A little snack to keep you going until dinner. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And and sugary sweet.
Not they don't make really super sweet things. Not like here.
Right.
But, you know, abundant, beautiful cakes.
Yeah.
A cake is a cake is a cake.
Yeah. Did being around German food culture have any type of impact on your own health, weight loss journey later in life, anything like that? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think when I was younger, my mom grew up during the war over there. And so they knew what it was like not to have anything, you know, or to have sparse amounts of food or meat or whatever. She always cooked German food. She didn't have a lot of success with American dishes like spaghetti and things like that. She always went back to heavy roasts and potatoes and, you know, cabbage and things like that.
Hearty food.
Hearty food. And it was, and it was also part of the Clean Plate Club. She'd always say, you know, if it's, if you don't finish your plate, there were times when we didn't have anything. You need to finish what's on your plate. And the sun won't shine tomorrow if you don't, which means you can't go outside.
Wow, now you're influencing the weather.
So there was that. And outside of the fact that she was very focused on food, and I do think that's because of the war when they didn't have it for so many years. So throughout her life, she struggled with her weight too.
She did.
And I struggled with my weight. And she also, I didn't have brothers or sisters. So she was just very, you know, you should be still. Go in the corner and read a book. Go sit over there and read a book. Sit. So it wasn't, we were kind of sedentary, honestly. No fault of hers. That's just what she would like to do, right? She would like to sit and be calm and be quiet and have it quiet and, you know, tidy and not make a mess. So I think from that, I was kind of sedentary and I was a very chunky kid.
Yeah.
I was born chunky. And then I remained a chunky kid because everybody believed in feeding you. In our house, there was a lot of, if you're happy, food. If you're sad, food. If you're scared, food. If you were, you know, grieving, food. Whatever it was celebratory or it was to pull you out of the doldrums, it was food.
Food as family member.
Yep. Food, food, food. So I think... You know, I was thinking about this listening to everybody else, and I do think that's probably where it stemmed for me because I think so. Because I was chunky through grade school. I mean, I got taunted and teased by the kids and everything else, and it made me more of an introvert.
Yeah.
And food helped give me comfort with that. And, but then when we got to Germany, I kind of found my footing after a couple years. It took a little while, and I was growing up, you know, so I wanted to use makeup and have boys notice me and, you know, and kids are in that middle school age. They can be mean as anything.
Yeah.
So they'll let you know if you were heavy or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And so, after some trauma with that, I decided I was going to just try to walk more. And I'm a kid. I'm a teenager. Hmm. You know, so then we spent a lot of time running around and playing outside and that kind of thing. There were more kids to do that with. And some of the weight started to come off. And then I got to, we came back to the States for high school. Mm-hmm. And I was losing a little bit. I lost a little bit of weight then. But I was still like a good size.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I went to college that I lost. Everybody gains the freshman 15.
Yeah.
I lost it.
I think I gained freshman 50, but we won't go there. You had said that your mother struggled with her weight.
Mm, was always on a diet.
So tell me what you saw. You're a fly in the wall watching your mother struggle with her yeah. weight. What did that look like?
I think they always did it for their men. Mm-hmm. Not always. I think a lot of it was for the men. They wanted them to look nice, to be, mm-hmm. you know, look sharp in their clothes and look mm-hmm. Nice with your, for your husband. I mean, I remember all kinds of diets that she would go on. And when I was really heavy in second or third grade, I remember my mom packing AIDS. Do you remember the candy yeah. AIDS? Mm-hmm. Those little square, they look
they
like
changed the name after the epidemic.
Yeah,
started,
yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But she would take those, and it came in, it looked like a check register box, like yeah. we used to get checks. Mm-hmm. And it was like they were caramel or they were chocolate. And she would tell me that was my candy for the day. Mm-hmm. So she would pack it with my lunch, and I would have that. And I remember her having that with a cup of coffee in the morning, having that with a cup of coffee in the evening, or going on crazy diets, something comparable to like the cabbage soup diet mm-hmm. or just not eating or yeah. just eating one thing or, you know, these silly things.
Right. Everybody else would be eating. She'd be somewhere else not yeah. eating type thing.
Well, she'd be sitting at the table, yeah. but she may have half, or she would have something different yeah. or she would skip lunch, or she would skip, you know, whatever, a meal or something. Yeah. We always ate dinner together at the table mm-hmm. At night. But
what did you hear if people spoke about weight, whatever that means to you? What did you hear them say when they spoke about weight, whether it was they were sharing what they thought about it or they were telling somebody else about their weight?
I think my mom belonged to, I had a circle of friends mm-hmm. and I think that they were always, somebody was always on a diet back yeah. then, you know, wanting to look nice for their husband, wanting to look nice for a party, wanting to look nice for a wedding.
So it was about somebody else.
Yeah. yeah. Not so much like I would love to just stuff my face and, yeah. you know, not worry about it. I think mm-hmm. the attitudes were different then. The expectations were a little different then too mm-hmm. for women. But, you know, she fell in with that group and they all, yeah. everybody was on a diet. Somebody was only they were only drinking coffee. Somebody was taking Dexatrim or some version of it. Somebody was, you know, doing something else or they weren't eating. They mm-hmm. were, or they'd only have coffee one time a week or whatever it was. It was yeah. always something goofy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, seeing her not being very happy, that mm-hmm. AIDS diet with the little caramels, you eat two and you have a cup mm-hmm. of coffee and that was dinner or something. And it seemed kind of extreme, yeah. you know, and she didn't enjoy doing it. She right. loved to cook. She loved to bake. She made beautiful cakes mm-hmm. and she loved to eat them, you know, because there was a time where they didn't have anything.
Right.
And she never understood why the weight wouldn't keep coming off and, you know, that kind of thing. And then later she found she had some thyroid issues and some other issues.
Yeah.
And so she was just kind of plagued with some problems that weren't going to make it, mm-hmm. make her 19 and 110 pounds again, you
right,
know?
Right.
So.
Did you ever hear her speak negatively about herself as it related to her weight? Did she ever say anything out loud?
She would
loud?
Say, I'm fat, you know?
Yeah.
She would say, I'm so fat. I need to lose whatever. Mm. Your dad wants me to, you know, trim up or a little bit, you know, she'd do the Jack LaLanne exercises. I do remember yeah. that on mm-hmm. television, you know, and
Jack LaLanne and his unitard.
Yeah. Wasn't it like a work?
It was like a short sleeve thing.
Like a one piece.
Yeah,
but
it was a total one piece. It even had like
pockets or something.
It was
on
like
it, right?
the pajamas with the feet at the bottom. He had feet. Yeah. He had feet like the pants had feet.
It reminded
on
me
them
of
too.
Like the gas station guy that used to put yeah. gas in your car. You know, like that
strange
jumpsuit that they would wear.
Jack LaLanne.
Yeah.
And did you see her? And so she would get kind of restrictive in her mm-hmm. intake. Mm-hmm. Did she ever do any, like, you know, over the line type of exercise stuff?
No.
No obsessiveness around that. Just
no.
She would get really restrictive.
Yeah, she was just very direct and very matter of fact about it. Right. I got to lose some weight. I'm going to do this. Hopefully it's going to work, you know?
Right.
And then she would lose weight and then I got it, you know, she would gain the weight back and then have to do it again. But so were her girlfriends at that time.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was losing weight for a party, losing weight for a wedding, losing weight for whatever.
So she, when she talked about it, if I understand you, it was a very matter of fact. This is the truth. I am overweight.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever get a sense that tied to that was a criticism on her character because she was overweight?
From herself?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You always, I mean, she didn't, I don't feel like her self-esteem was great either. Mm-hmm. You know, she came to a new country.
Sure.
She didn't speak the language well. She spoke it, but not fluently. She moved to the South, which is a different language than English sometimes, depending on where you live. And she had no friends, you know, and had to start over. She was starting over. We moved around a little bit, not a ton. She'd make friends, you know, she had a few lifelong friends, which were wonderful. But I think it took a minute to get all that, to get there.
You just said mom didn't have a lot of friends.
No, she had a small group of friends, a circle, and many of them were German.
Gotcha.
And they had a little German club in town, and they did their things together. They'd make coffee, and they'd make cake once in a while, or they'd do this, or they'd meet and read a book together or something like that.
Right. And so you're in middle school over there in Germany. Well, what was your experience of your peers in middle school and in high school?
Well, so I was chunky. I was big, a big kid, from first grade on. My dad went to Vietnam and I was very thin. My mom and I walked everywhere. We did all kinds of, in America, we'd walk, we ate. It was, you weren't cooking for a husband then.
Right.
We'd have soup a lot, or we'd have this, or we'd have that, lighter meals and things like that. And then, and I was very thin and I was very finicky.
Right.
And so then my dad came back from Vietnam. We sat down every night. You know, we weren't running around as much out in the woods walking around or, you know, adventures or anything like that. So the weight started packing on and it stayed on. But then we went to Germany. Kids can be mean in middle school. They are mean in middle school, you know, and they do the new fat kid and that kind of thing. And so you get a lot of
easy target.
Didn't matter if you were nice or smart or whatever, you were fat. And so, I didn't want to be that, but I was there and I said, and it was tough to have a kid. Like there was a kid in our building, our apartment building, that would wait for me to leave in the morning. And his sister and I were really good friends and we would walk to the bus and he would follow me to the bus humming the Ironside song. And at the end he'd say, Johanna QM production. But he'd wait until he was in earshot of other kids. And that made it hard, you know, cause kids just glom onto things. And so I dealt with that for years. And then finally I started losing some weight. I was getting, you know, preteen, teenage years. And I was getting out more and doing more things and eating a little less and trying to make better choices, even though I didn't really know what they were. My mom always had a drawer with cakes and cookies and chocolates. If you wanted something, go get it.
Oh,
because she didn't have it for so many years.
Right.
So she always had that. And my dad, it was interesting, grew up in a really poor family and they didn't have it either. But his, instead of having a drawer for everyone to have, he would buy things for himself and tuck it away.
Yeah.
And then like mash it with his finger, each piece of candy or something, so nobody else would eat
Marking
it.
Marking his territory.
Yeah, yeah. So from that aspect, you know, there was different approaches to it. But then I knew I needed to stay away from that chocolate drawer, even though it was delicious German confections in there. But so that helped. And then we got to the States and I decided there was going to be something different. And I'd started cheerleading over there too in JV. And so I was
in Germany.
In Germany for the American little football team we had.
Right.
And that helped too. You know, I was moving more. I was with other girls that were a little bit smaller, that were much smaller than me. But they were encouraging. And so they were a little tribe of people and we had fun and I was losing weight and it was all good. And then when we came to the States, I lost a little bit more weight.
Yeah.
It was fine. I was still a good size, but no one really mocked me about it in high school.
Right.
I mean, when we came here. And then when I went to college, as opposed to gaining the freshman 15, I lost the freshman 30, I think.
Right.
And I stayed that small until I was in my 30s.
How did you lose those pounds?
It was just like when you're in college, I was walking a lot more. You know, one class was in a building here, another one's like a quarter mile away, half a mile away. We had stairs. We were on the third floor in our dorm.
Being engaged in life.
Yeah. Getting out, doing stuff, that meeting people.
That was the
people.
Trick. Mm-hmm.
Mm. And it was off before I knew it. Yeah. And the food was different than what I grew up with, you know? So I didn't love it. I got used to it, but there was like a lot of grilled chicken. There was a lot of salads. There was a lot of this, a lot of that, you know?
Yeah.
Which was fine because it was a culinary school. But I learned to eat a little differently too. Yeah. So that was all good. And I had a better metabolism by then, you know.
Didn't we all?
Yeah.
High school in North Carolina.
Yep.
Finished out your last 3 years.
Yep.
At what point in that high school process did you start thinking about college, and what were you thinking about college?
Right away. Everything was on my goal. My mom always said, you know, she was the enforcer. You're going to college.
Yeah.
You're
going
to go to college. You're not going to, you know, you're going to work and make good money. So you don't have to do things like, you know, you don't have to cook if you don't want to learn how to cook. You don't have to clean your house if you don't want to have to, you know, as long as you're educated and you pick a good profession and you make nice money, you can take care of yourself.
Right.
You don't need to depend on anybody. You got you, you know, you can take. And so that was the goal always.
When you heard that message, like, cause what did you think when you heard her tell you that?
It was kind of empowering, you know, and it was different. I could see like it was really good advice given from my mother.
I mean, it sounds like she almost encouraged you to go ahead and take some risks.
Yeah, for sure.
Like,
I don't know that she encouraged it, but she didn't realize by saying that it was encouraging me to like, you know what? Here's the worst thing that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to fail and I'm going to get up and try it again.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to be trying to make smart decisions when I take a step out because I'm on my own, right? So that's what I did. I never planned to get married. I didn't need anybody then. I made good money.
Right.
I was living a good life. Everything was fine. And then I met my husband when I moved to Charlotte.
Yeah.
After New York, my time in New York. And
how'd you get to New York?
I got a job offer from a company that had a great training program. And I was one of my top three wants, and I knew if I was going to be a great merchant that I needed to go where, like, to the epicenter of, you know, where fashion was then.
Right.
And so, I knew I had to work somewhere in New York, and I found this program and I found this company and I loved it, and they kindly hired me.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to school in Johnson & Wales in Rhode Island. And got my associate's degree, but I decided not to stay for my bachelor's degree because I wanted one more experience in with design.
Mm-hmm.
And two, it was very cold. So a piece of my ear got frostbitten off, and I decided
literally
in a class, I was sitting there taking an exam and a piece of my ear fell off, and a little one. And I said, I think I need to go somewhere warmer. Yeah. That was my first, like, I got to get out of this cold.
Yeah, or put a hat on, Johanna.
Well, jeez. I had a hat, but it wasn't fashionable to wear one.
Would somebody get Johanna some earmuffs, please? You said you decided not to finish at J&W because you wanted one. How did you put it? You wanted one more opportunity, experience with design.
Yeah, I wanted a better experience, more detailed experience with design, and they didn't offer design.
I see.
So I transferred to a school in Atlanta. Ooh, weather's perfect. And ended up getting my bachelor's with a minor in design from the American College for the Applied Arts.
How did you get that first taste of design that made you think, oh, I want some more of that?
I was watching a movie called... Well, my mom was a buyer, and so she always talked about, you know, oh, you have to pick the right things, and you have to pick the right amount of things for certain kinds of stores, and I thought, that's kind of cool. That's something different to do all the time, right? And then I'd seen a movie with Diana Ross called Mahogany, and I thought, oh, she was a designer. She wanted to be a designer. Oh, how cool is that? Oh, I want to be a designer. That looks cool. It looks creative, and it looks fun. Well, when I was in college, and I really... I was, had my hands in it. It was really nice to know how things were made, but I wasn't probably the best constructor. and no matter how good my ideas were, I couldn't quite get them out. And I thought, gosh, there's a ton of designers out there, and I'm sure there's a ton of starving designers out there. Do I really want to be one of them? So I knew I needed some other experience anyway, and I wanted to go into the stores and see. I think.
Yeah.
And then what ended up happening was I was able to use my design experience when I went overseas to construct garments. I knew how to negotiate out costing for garments because I knew the prices of buttons or the prices of the labor to get the button on or the, you know, that kind of thing.
So are you trying to tell me that because, and you will understand what I mean by this, it's obviously not derogatory, that by not being successful as a designer, it's still the fact that you tried to go down that path, you picked something up from it that you could apply somewhere else, and that led to probably maybe more success than you might have experienced had you stayed in design?
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, again, it was a calculated risk to do that, and it was going to pay off either way. I didn't want to go full head into design, which probably was the reason I wasn't as successful at it. You know, I had a backup. I wanted to be, I did want to be a merchant. I wanted to have design knowledge and understand, just understand the whole construction thing. But I just wasn't quite talented enough, I think, to be a, you know, a fabulous designer. And that's just how it goes. So, but I was able to take that. I'm glad I took that risk because I met wonderful people in the school that I went to. They were very much my tribe. I was able to have an extra skill set that a lot of kids didn't, a lot of young adults didn't have when they came out of college. So it made me like when, you know, when my buyer was talking to something, I would talk to the manufacturer saying when I was an assistant, well, why do you have silver snaps? Silver snaps are, you know, the cheapest things you can put on something. Why wouldn't you do dyed to match if you're asking a high price? So that really helped me in working. You know, my vendors would, you know, throughout my career, my vendors seemed to really respect my opinion on construction of garments and things like that. And my eye, I have a pretty good eye for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Are you in the fashion industry?
Yes.
Obviously, when you talk garments, you're talking clothing.
Yeah.
But
it could be a million things. Yeah. It could be home store. Right. It could be, you know, shoes. It could be fashion. It could be anything.
Right.
Appliances.
If you have fashion advice for somebody, what's the best piece of fashion advice you could deliver to somebody?
If it's too tight or too short, donate it.
Fit is king. That job that you had that brought you to New York eventually led you back to North Carolina.
It did.
And coming back to North Carolina, sounds like that also led you to a bunch of places maybe you hadn't planned on when you first walked out of Johnson & Wales.
Yeah,
to go to a different school.
1,000,000%. I mean, I thought I would live in New York a while and then I'd go back to Atlanta, but I ended up living in New York much longer than I anticipated, and then coming back to Charlotte because of a job offer, and I would be traveling for the next year. I was home a total of about 30 days. I was in the Orient multiple times, and I did that for years, and in New York working or in stores, shopping the stores to see if the customer was buying or what were they thinking or what were they liking and not liking, things like that. And just doing due diligence. And I was making great money and I was living on my own and everything was fine. You know, it was a great life, and it was something I wouldn't have gotten to do otherwise, you know? So I was very fortunate that way. I got to see a lot of cool stuff.
Good thing you didn't think you had what it take to be a fabulous designer, huh?
Right. What? Well, everything happens for a reason. My mom always said that.
Yeah. You believe that?
I do. I do. I believe you come across the people that you need when you do, and I think that everything does happen for a reason.
I'm always looking for patterns, and how is that experience reflected in this experience? You know what I mean? Like kind of common threads. When you think back to your experience as you were starting to figure out where you were going professionally. And, you know, there's the peaks and the valleys, right? Is there anything, and I'm not saying there should be, but is there anything that you look back on that experience that you see might be reflected in your weight loss experience?
Sure.
Like what?
I mean, I think that's in life. There are challenges. There are rewards. There are joyous moments. There are disappointing moments. I had all that when I was, you know, working in retail as well. So, and I think that's just the roller coaster of life, you know, and I think whether you're, it's weight or something else.
We all
have that.
What was your most joyous moment in your professional life or has been?
I made a shirt that Roseanne Barr wore on the Connor's ones. No, I didn't make it. Yeah. I worked with the manufacturer to make it.
Wow.
That was kind of cool.
Not only did you see it, but millions of people
saw it. Yeah, and I remember I was just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Awesome. Yeah, that was kind of neat.
Wow.
And
can I, was your mother still living?
Yeah.
And did she share it in that? Like, were you able to say, Mom, see that shirt?
We didn't. Yeah. 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 It wasn't like, you know, you could freeze the frame sure. at the time. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But she was pretty proud.
That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
I'm glad you had that experience. Yeah. That's wonderful. I'm glad she had that experience too.
It was pretty cool. She really liked it when I went to Asia because she could tell her girlfriends. Oh, she's in Asia.
Favorite country you've ever visited outside of Germany?
Mm-hmm. For work, it would have been Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
When I went, it was still under British rule.
Mm.
And so everyone spoke English. The signs were in English. It was easy to get around. It was very safe. You could go by yourself. You could go with a group. The shopping was, you know, phenomenal.
Right.
I bought so much on one trip. I had to buy a second piece of luggage to mm. carry back. But the people were just lovely. And it was cool to see something in a different culture.
Mm-hmm.
The food was very interesting to me. Although I was a little nervous, but one of my best friend who was also a buyer for the same company, when we would go, she would try it and then she would look at me and go, don't eat it. Or yeah, I think you can eat it, yeah. you know, that kind of thing. But, it was just really cool. I love that country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about just in normal travel, when you travel, if there's a country you would love to go to because you've been there and I just know how wonderful it is, where would you choose to go?
Well, I would choose to go to Germany. Yeah. You know, I have family there. So it's any time I can spend with my family is mm-hmm. awesome.
You met your husband.
Yep.
Or the person who became your husband yep. eventually here in Charlotte.
Yes, I did.
What do you recall about the city of Charlotte that is no longer true?
I moved here from New York City the weekend of Hurricane Hugo.
Mm.
I didn't move here. I moved here on Labor Day weekend, I should mm-hmm. say. I left the next day for the Orient.
Mm.
When I got back from the Orient,
oh boy.
Hurricane, we got delayed coming back because of a storm,
yeah,
which was Hurricane Hugo. So when I left Charlotte, it was lush and green and beautiful trees and flowers. And when I got mm-hmm. back, it looked like a war zone.
Yeah.
So that's no longer like that.
Wow.
Charlotte was also really small.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always been a beautiful city and I've always loved it, but it was very small at the time. Mm-hmm. So from New York, it was quiet to me.
Yeah.
It was almost scary.
I'm always struck by the size of the city in the early 90s when I see photographs. I'm like, wait a minute. This
is tiny. How did this become that? Right.
That's incredible.
I think banking blew it up we had sports teams and banking sure. and things like that kind of blew it up.
Just the skyline, you know?
It's really pretty.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So you talked about meeting Bruce
mm-hmm.
very briefly. You just mentioned that you met him here in Charlotte. How mm-hmm. did that happen?
My best friend, who was my co-buyer, and I traveled all the time together. And mm-hmm. she had just gotten married when they moved from New York down to Charlotte. And their next door neighbor was my now husband.
Yeah.
So the two of them hung out all the time. They were having a great time. And the two of us were working all the time. And he was seeing someone, I was seeing someone different, and they both said, she and her husband said that we should introduce them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a good fit. He's a nice guy. She's a nice girl. That'd be, you know, whatever. We met. It was a horrible meeting. It was definitely, we were definitely not looking at each other like, yeah, I want to do mm-hmm. this again.
Yeah.
And then over time we found that, you know, we had limited circle of friends because we right. were always traveling or whatever. And so our friend group would say, oh, it was always couples. Oh, let's get together and play a game. Everybody couple up. Well, we were the only two single people, so we would be right. coupled together to play a game or do whatever. Or you two bring this. You know, this couple's going to bring that, and you bring that. We're going to do yeah. a potluck, and you two bring this. And so over time, we got to know each other and became friends.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really, really nice. I mean, I didn't give him a chance at first, but mm-hmm. he was really trying hard, too, to be nice. But he was nice and he was smart and he was kind and funny and it's all the attributes you want in a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And we became best friends. And then, we wanted to date, but then we're kind of nervous about it. Like, who gets the friends if this doesn't pan out? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we secretly dated. Then we got busted, and then we had to date in public.
What were your friends who tried to get the two of you together? What were they telling you about Bruce that in your first few interactions with him, you're like, that is not true. That's not my experience of him all.
Yeah.
What were you being told, and what was the difference between what you think you saw?
Oh, he's so nice, and he's sweet, and he's funny, and he's kind of charming. And I was like, yeah, right, that's not that guy. And he had a David Cassidy haircut, mm-hmm. you know, like, and that was like 10 years mm-hmm. old, that haircut.
Sure.
By then. And so I was like, yeah. No.
And you're coming from the world of high fashion.
Yeah.
And here comes David Cassidy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
A blonde David Cassidy. yeah, but, you know, he didn't think much more of me. And he thought I was wound very tight, mm-hmm. and that I was a little bit, had a little bit of a mm-hmm. snotty snob problem. But, you know, then we became friends, and you get to just show, it just goes to show you with everything. Mm-hmm. You just got to give everybody a chance, whether it's weight loss or whether it's a relationship or, you
yourself.
Know, yourself. You just got to give it, right. give yourself a chance.
Great point.
Be open to it.
Was there a point that you remember saying to yourself, all right, maybe he's not as bad as I thought?
When I got to know him, you know, like.
But a specific moment?
Maybe we did a progressive New Year's dinner one year, and he was like, you can bring your portion to my house and we'll just put it together and it'll be fine. Yeah. And he had done all this work to make this Caesar salad from scratch. And I thought, oh my God, I bought like a pound of shrimp or mm-hmm. 2 pounds of shrimp at Harris Teeter. And it was on a, cause at that time I didn't cook. it was on a thing. I thought I made it fancy. I cut up some lemons. I put some ice on it. He had done all this work. And I just thought, oh God, that was so sweet. You know, and he's like, we'll just say we both did every, you know, that kind of thing. It's just, this is our section
right.
for our piece to host. And it was like, oh, how sweet.
So he invited you in to share in the grandeur of his Caesar salad.
He was a pretty smoking cook then. Yeah. He did all the cooking at first.
Well done, Bruce.
Yeah.
2021 rolls around. Mm-hmm. What had been your experience of WW by the time you walked into the studio over there on Cherry Road in 2021? What was your experience up until that point?
So this is a program we've been to the rodeo on a couple mm-hmm. times. So the first time we were excited, but we lost some weight and said, you know what? It's expensive. We got this. Mm-hmm. We can do it. The second the weight that we lost, we gained back and more. Mm-hmm. And then we said, we can do this.
Yeah.
And then in between we tried some other diets and, you know, the old cabbage soup diet, the carbohydrate addicts diet, mm-hmm. the whatever, all these different diets. And it would work for a week and then we'd be done with the diet and it's come right back on, you know, it would find you again, whatever you lost. Mm-hmm. And so
we turn into fat detective, don't we?
Don't we?
Yeah.
And you want it gone fast. And mm-hmm. so we had been several times members of Weight Watchers. And then in 2018, we were living north of Charlotte and we had decided we need to do this, but we need to really do this one. Mm-hmm. We need to be committed. We can't look at it as if I lost 4 pounds this week, a pound next week, and a pound the next, I'll be done in 3 months.
Right.
We need to look at this as a lifestyle. Meaning if we travel and we want to have a piece of pizza in Italy or whatever, we can do that, or pasta or whatever. We want a glass of wine there, we can do that. But we have to make it work. So we have to make this program work for us. And so most of the time we eat within our points, but sometimes we don't. But what we do is we just get right back on it. Mm-hmm. And I think the meetings really help encourage you to get on it and stay on it, mm-hmm. you know. And if you slip, everybody slips. Or if you decide you want to have a decadent week or whatever. Mm-hmm. But as long as you get back on it, we all encourage each other in those meetings. So when 2020 rolled around, we both gained weight because of COVID. Mm-hmm. Let's cook. Let's bake. We don't know if we're going to be alive tomorrow. Let's, you know, let's fry something. And then 2021, when then we moved in the summer of 2020. 2021 came around. My mother had passed away. Mm. And before that, I was her caretaker. And I do have a very new gained empathy and respect for anybody who has to be a caretaker. But she had passed away after living with us for a year. And again, I was learning to navigate my way around being a caretaker, I was eating. I was stuffing it in, you know, it went back to that initial thing that I told you. When we were happy, we ate. When we were sad, we mm-hmm. ate. When we were frustrated, we ate. You know, it was always about just shove it in and and some of it wasn't even because I was hungry. I know for sure it was just force of habit, an old habit coming back. So for me, the online meetings were not so great in, because you don't have to necessarily be super truthful in those. But when people see you, they can see you.
Sure.
So we started back in them in March, I think. And we walked into the Weight Watcher studio and we had, first of all, the coach I recognized from online. She was funny. She was smart. She also, Donna, she also would lay it out like it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, listen, you didn't get fat eating carrots. Don't complain. Yeah. You know, if you got to eat carrots now. But, and she was very realistic, you know, and I thought, oh, that's kind of the, and then we started meeting the group. We met you guys and everybody was serious about it. It was kind of cool also to see couples in a group. Cause I don't know that we'd ever, maybe we'd experienced a guy here and there or a couple here and there, but there are a good number of couples in our meetings. So I think we were able to both glean a little bit of knowledge from their stories too and their shares.
Right.
Yeah. So that made us really buy into the, and so we've been doing it. It took a long time. It took me 5 years, but I finally got to my goal weight.
Yeah.
And then there's the terror of, am I going to be able to maintain this? Right. Before on a diet, you finish the diet and you, you were, let's see how it goes. You know, this now is a lifestyle for us. So
you said that, you know, we made that decision that it was going to be a lifestyle. What are the bullet points as to why you felt it had to become a lifestyle?
As we got older, you know, you're huffing and puffing when you're going up the stairs. You can't tie your shoe. You don't have the stamina. You don't fit in your clothes. Things don't look right. You're not comfortable. You can't move and bend and twist the way you could.
Yeah.
And as you get older, if you want to live a longer life, and I do, I want to travel when he retires and do a lot of things. We needed to be in better shape than we were to do that kind of thing. I didn't want to be in a situation where, oh, we can stay home and watch TV or we can walk to the mailbox, you know?
Right. So currently, are your whys any different than they were 4 or 5 years ago?
Well, we've been in it 5 years this time, but in the previous times, oh, yeah, it'd be like, I want to fit in a size X, or I want to do this, or I, you know, we've got a party, or we've got a whatever. Some things coming up, you know. But this one was like, I want to be healthy. I want to be able to stay healthy, and I don't want to keep going up and down. I'm tired of this. I'm just tired of being tired, kind of.
What are the signs that one can observe when Johanna is healthy?
More energy. I think that I'm a little bit more fun. I'm a lot more secure in myself.
What do you mean? Talk about that.
I think you worry still, even, you know, I think from that young age where I experienced all that taunting, I think it comes back to that. You know, like, I never want to be teased like that again.
Yeah.
I never want to, you know, when you're heavy, people don't, oh, you know, they speak to you a little differently sometimes or... And when you lose weight, people are like, oh, my God, you lost so much weight. Oh, you look so much better. Well, what did I look like before?
Yeah.
You know? So that's the kind of thing I was not wanting to experience again.
Gotcha. The in-person meetings you've been attending regularly, and you have seen and experienced with everybody else the changes. Have there been any changes that you believe have really been big time challenges in the last 4 years for you, just for you?
For me, I think, yeah, there have been some challenges.
What do you think?
I think at one point they changed part of the program from just all being point, a certain kind of points, to being like red points, purple points, whatever. That was hard for me.
Yeah.
I think, and it's not derogatory to Weight Watchers. It's what they feel that they need to do.
Sure.
I think the lack of a variety of meetings doesn't help. If you're someone that needs a live meeting, you have maybe three choices now. You know, before there were an abundant amount of choices.
Right.
So those are some things for me that have changed that make it a little bit challenging. Because maybe on a Tuesday. But what's helping me, Patrick, is these great podcasts that you do. So on Wednesday, when I would normally need want occasionally a meeting, I can flip on your podcast and I can get some good insight or motivation or just a nugget of wisdom from someone. And nope, you don't know. You've said it before. You don't know what you say mm-hmm. that affects other people yeah. or that helps them get through their day mm-hmm. or their challenges. That's what I would hope to glean yeah. from it. Yeah. Those are my challenges, mm-hmm. I think.
If you were to suggest something for WW, and maybe there's nothing that you would suggest that you think would improve the program, however you define that, mm-hmm. what might a change be that makes sense to you?
I think all chocolate cake should be 1 point.
No, not for Ma.
No. No, I think, you know, for a lot of people, there's only 3 or 4 meetings in a week, mm-hmm. I think it's 3 now.
Yeah.
There's only 3 meetings in a week, and that doesn't work with your schedule.
Yeah.
You don't get a live meeting. And for a lot of us, unfortunately, we need to pay the Weight Watcher company mm-hmm. and stand on a scale in front of somebody.
Right.
You know, for mm-hmm. me, that accountability is what I need.
Yeah.
And I would imagine I'm not alone in that. You hear it all the time. I need the mm-hmm. accountability. I need to be at a meeting.
Yeah.
So I wish there were more opportunities for meetings.
Right.
In the area. You know, I have a friend who lives in D.C. and has to travel like 45 minutes one mm-hmm. way to get to a meeting now.
Right.
Thanks for listening to part one of my conversation with Johanna. I really thought that was some interesting stuff. I always wonder just those types of experiences where you're brought up in a particular culture, and even though you might have some access to another culture, suddenly you find yourself immersed in it, that other culture, and how does that impact somebody's development, if at all. But obviously the just being around people that speak a different language is a big deal. I have a brain that I simply find it very difficult really to learn anything, let alone another language. So my hat is off to anybody that is able to do that. And Johanna, I think, exemplifies being open to new experiences. She's somebody who, I believe, just in talking with her, embraces the idea of a growth mindset. In other words, I put myself at the mercy of my experience in the hope that I will learn something new. And because I don't master it, doesn't mean that I'm worse off. Just making the effort and getting what I can out of it is the reward. Johanna does not strike me as somebody that does not master certain skills, however. Part two, we really kind of get into the nitty gritty of her Weight Watchers journey. And weight, all that stuff. So I hope when that is released that you'll download it and listen to it. And of course, you can find the link to that episode once it's posted. I will post the link in the chat of Coach Sherry's chat section on the WW app. If you don't have the WW app, then I question how you got this podcast. But I hope that was at least fun to listen to. I know I had a lot of fun listening. And like I said, I had received a message in my inbox finally, and it was not spam. That does not happen very often. This is the first time it's occurred. And it was a question somebody wanted me to explore a little bit. And before I, A, read the question, and B, respond to the question, remember, you're under your own power. I'm not providing you with, you need to go do this, or you need to think of it in the way that I think of it. This is just my take on it. Somebody thinks that my opinion has some value. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I'll leave that up to you. But it is from somebody who asked that I refer to them as Grace. I don't believe that is their real name. But it says, Patrick, I have joined WW many times over the years. I have lost some weight, but have also stopped, gained back that weight, and then more, even more. How can I not beat myself up about it? I need some grace for myself from Grace. Well, Grace, so first, I guess I would respond like this. What makes you think that being the human being that you are, that you won't ever beat yourself up about gaining weight or not gaining weight? I think it's important that we all acknowledge the fact that there's that voice inside of our heads that is just going to be critical no matter what, no matter what you do. If you do it right, you're going to find some way to say you didn't do it right. If you did it wrong, you're going to emphasize and exaggerate how wrong you did it. We're very rarely, I think, honest with ourselves when providing accurate feedback, right? We usually always err on the side of the negative, and I think that's a normal. That's just who we are as human beings. So whether it's I didn't eat what I quote-unquote should have, or I didn't eat what was the healthiest choice, or I gained weight based on my behavior this week, or I have now surpassed the amount of weight I lost in gaining it back, right? In other words, I gained the amount of weight that I lost and then some. Like, if you're in Weight Watchers and you've never done that, then congratulations to you. I don't know too many people that haven't lost weight through whatever means, even Weight Watchers, and then gained it back, right? So it's not so much, you know, how do you not beat yourself up? It's, I guess, really either how do you stop doing it once you find yourself doing it? And then once you've stopped it, you know, like in mid-thought, or you've not added on to the one or many negative thoughts you've had about yourself, what do you do to balance that out in an accurate, truthful manner? So it's not about not thinking a certain way or not beating yourself up, you know, avoiding those negative critiques of our behavior or negative critiques of the outcome and how our behavior played a role. That's not to say we don't acknowledge it, but to, you know, literally use it as a club to hurt yourself with is not helpful. It's not helpful. It's not going to help you lose weight. It certainly won't help you keep weight off. You know, those negative emotions, fear, guilt, all that stuff, shame, like, okay, they have their place, right? There are some things we do that we should feel shameful about, right? If we knowingly harm somebody, having a sense of shame over that is a good thing. If you don't have shame over that, hopefully somebody's investigating you as someone who might be a possible serial killer, you know? Right? So having shame is not a bad thing in and of itself. It's when you are cloaked in shame for everything that you have thought or said or done and have never had a nuanced response to it. That's where it's not helpful, right? Feeling guilty over every little, you know, the person who apologizes for getting up in the morning, I'm so sorry, I became part of your day today. I don't know how you deal with the likes, right? Like that's, I don't like the word when it's overused, toxic. But being around that kind of attitude, you know, it's like dragging an anchor around with you. And being the person that does that, like, how do you even get out of bed every morning if all you do is hurt yourself with thoughts? You know, if you don't think that you're worthy to even be here, like, that's not helpful. So you're going to have those instantaneous negative critiques. You get on the scale and you're up 4.5 from last week. Or you haven't weighed in a while and you think you're going to be one weight and nope, add 15 to that, right? And then what do? Oh my God, I'm awful. I'm a fat pig. Oh, I suck. Why am I doing this? Blah, 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 blah. Ad nauseum, right? So the trick here is to practice A, realizing when you're doing it, B, hitting the brakes, C, balancing that out with something that is true and yet also helpful, right? You get on the scale, you're up 15 from where you thought you would be, and you say, oh my God, it's worse than I thought. I'm worse than I thought. I'm terrible. Wait a minute. Okay. I lost 100. So for me personally, I'm speaking as myself right now. I lost 113 to get to my goal. Wonderful. Great. I think I maintained being at goal for, we'll call it like 5 months, just being a goal. Now, prior to 2021, if you wanted somebody to tell you what the latest items were at any fast food establishment, I was your guy. I was your guy to tell you how much you could reasonably expect to spend if you got these items at this particular fast food place and these items at this particular fast food place. I could probably tell you what to avoid as far as taste, blah, 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 right? I was a connoisseur of fast food. Fast food being anything one might find themselves picking up at a drive-thru window. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack time, downtime, board time, any time, right? And I think I've shared in earlier episodes that prior to joining Weight Watchers, by breakfast time, I had eaten easily what my current daily points allotment is, right? I get like 28 points per day where I am right now. And I was eating probably 30-something points before 10 o'clock in the morning. That's insane. But that's what I was doing. And if you want a case study in how to gain weight in the most efficient manner, all you had to do was observe me for about 4 days, because it was eat as much high processed, overly processed, ultra processed, fatty, sugary, carby food that one picks up at a drive-thru, and then don't do anything from a physical exercise perspective. So eat a lot of fuel and literally expend none of it and allow it to accumulate into adipose tissue, aka fat, and then wonder, how did I gain all that weight? That was me right up until April of 2021. And it was embarrassment and shame and guilt that finally caused me to have a thought like, you know, I can't keep doing this. I can't continue to eat like this. And then when called upon to exert myself in the most minimum of ways, I'm unable to do so. Right, my Las Vegas experience. My buddy paid for a trip for me to go to Las Vegas, and I was a terrible companion because I could not move and I was embarrassed to be seen. And I felt like a heel the entire way home. How could I do that to my friend? How could I reward his generosity and friendship with such a pitiful performance in the field? You went to Fun City, USA, and you didn't do a darn thing. And it was because of how you thought about yourself, because you were so heavy. That's, in a nutshell, what caused me to come home and say, honey, we're going to Weight Watchers. If you're in, you're in. If you're out, you're out. So shame and guilt, like those negative emotions, they have their place. But you know what? It wasn't shame and guilt that caused me then to maintain. Those can get you to change course. They cannot necessarily get you to stay on that course once you've changed it. I hope that makes sense. You've got to tap into other things. So, where am I now? So, I weighed in at like 167.8 back in May or June of 2023, I think. And maintained that until probably like, I don't know, January, February, somewhere in there. And then I completely stopped exercising. I just stopped exercising. What didn't I do, however, in addition to exercise? So I didn't exercise, but I also didn't return to fast food windows. Okay. And let me tell you something. This has been a helpful thing for me over the last year. Because over the last year, I fluctuated between like 179 and like 188. Okay. Now, for those of you who are amateur mathematicians, you're doing the math. Oh my gosh. That means he's gained upwards of 20 pounds. Yeah, okay, fine. We'll call it 20. We'll call it 20 pounds. I've gained 20 pounds. Yep. In about 2 years, I gained about 20 pounds. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you that 20 pounds over 2 years for me ain't nothing. It's nothing. Now, has it gotten the attention of my physician? Yeah, but you know what? He's freaking out because he thinks he doesn't see how that 20 pounds is coming on. And I'm telling you right now, it's coming on because I literally don't exercise. I just don't exercise. And that's a whole other podcast. Now, am I minimizing this? I don't think so. Why? Well, I've not had to go up a size, given the fact that I've gained 20 pounds. Okay. Now that might mean that I could have gone down a size once I hit my goal weight, but I've not had to go up in anything bigger. So that is a huge victory. And I'm definitely paying attention to that. I've not had any fast food, literally. Zero fast food. I have not ordered a Big Mac. If you want to count coffee at Dunkin' Donuts as fast food, that's your prerogative. I will not do that. I will count anything that you eat at Dunkin' Donuts as fast food, not necessarily the coffee. That being said, I've not ordered a Big Mac, a Whopper. I've not had even so much as a roast beef sandwich at Arby's. I will not count a 6-inch turkey sub on wheat as fast food, only because I don't get it necessarily through a drive-through window, but I do eat a 6-inch sub and count the points when I do have it. So I don't see that. I get it kind of quickly, but, you know, I'm not going to count it as fast food necessarily. I don't buy giant bags of chips like I used to. I have not had any cereal breakfast cereal, sugary breakfast cereal, since 2021. Like the list goes on. My behaviors are so vastly different. Gaining this 20 pounds over about 2 years, than they used to be. I could gain 20 pounds in 2 weeks and have over the course of my life. I can gain 8 pounds in a day if I want. If I wanted to, I could go do it. Believe me, I could do it. All right. I've not starved myself. I don't think I've gone into disordered eating. I've just been a complete slug. And that has always been my MO, right? In addition to overeating stuff, just not exercising is huge. And I haven't necessarily adjusted for not exercising. I haven't adjusted my food intake for not exercising. I still eat veggies. I love raw broccoli. I love raw cauliflower, carrots, celery. I've gone from eating full-blown heavy-duty ranch dressing dip, right, to a Greek yogurt dip made with ranch mix. It is such a different place that I find myself at than I had in my teens and 20s and 30s and 40s and my very early 50s. I'm still very proud of the fact that I go to a meeting every weekend, especially when I'm in town. If I'm in town, I go to a meeting. I don't find ways to get out of going. Do I get up every morning and say to myself, oh, I don't want to go? Yeah, I definitely have those mornings. Right? Ugh. Another meeting? Yes. And the crazy thing is, once I get into that meeting and I get around the folks that are there, man, I already feel better. I already feel energized just being around people. And I can be kind of introverted, quiet in my head before a meeting starts. But nobody should read anything into that. That's just me being me. But usually once the meeting starts, regardless of what I'm doing, I'm usually paying attention to what's being said. And I usually almost always get something out of it. So am I at goal weight? Nope, I am not. I still weigh less than I weighed when I graduated from high school. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. Okay, that is so awesome in my mind. The fact that I am not just overflowing with adiposity, right? That's huge. My exercise thing comes in waves. I can't explain it. Well, I can't explain it in the time I have left talking right now. Like I said, that's a whole other podcast. For me, it is this idea that I have been able to maintain consistency in other extremely important behaviors. It's not the only behavior when it comes to losing weight and maintaining your weight, but not returning or finding myself drifting towards old eating patterns since 2021 is just, man, I'm so proud of that. And I could pay really close attention to this fact that, okay, I'm not at goal weight anymore. I could just make it all about the weight, the weight, the weight, the weight, the weight. I choose not to do that right now. Oh, that's convenient. Yeah, okay, whatever. But it's true. I'm not going to die of shame. I'm not going to accentuate the one thing that did not work out in an optimal fashion at the expense of a bunch of other things that have. And if I ever find myself beating myself up because the scale is not what it was June 2023, I say, well, you know what? You're also not feeding your face with junk food and all of the other stuff that your brain was just obsessed with that made it difficult for you to lose weight in the first place. I'm not doing that. I've maintained healthy behaviors when it comes to eating. That's gotta say something, right? Right? It's gotta say something. So why did I go through all that? Simple. Because Grace wants to know how to not beat herself up. The bigger question is, how do you build yourself up after you've said something not terribly nice about yourself? That's the trick. That's the trick. The trick is, you know what? Maybe I'm overthinking this a little bit. Maybe what I think is so terribly awful, maybe that's just my brain trying to convince me to go back to old behaviors. I just refuse to go to McDonald's. I refuse to go to Burger King. I refuse to go to Jack in the Box, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Because in those places, for the most part, is death for me. It's death. Have you been through the Weight Watchers routine a bunch? Yep, great. Welcome. Welcome. You're one of us. You're one of us. You have a tribe. And we get it. We understand. And we're not going to judge you for it. So stop doing that to yourself. I don't know how many times I have to say it, but I'm going to say it one more time. You want to find success? Look to your failures. Look to your perceived failures. The blueprint to your success is locked away in there. The explanation as to how you came to drift away from helpful behaviors is right in there. That's the trick. Can I look at those moments in the past for what they were? They were moments that right before I had a thought and right after a pattern of behavior began to take root or began to become familiar to me again. And so how do you, we always say, get back on track. I say, well, how do you form a new track? Form a new track by having a different thought. Especially after you've had a same old thought. I'm terrible. I'm terrible. I'm awful. I can't do it. Pretty simple. And yet it's pretty complex. It takes practice. It doesn't happen overnight. Just like your weight gain didn't happen overnight. You're not going to learn these new behaviors unless you start practicing. You've got to build on what you have. If you can recognize that you are being hard on yourself, then recognize it, acknowledge it, and then balance it out. How do I balance it out? That's up to you. Get creative. Write down a list of everything that you're still really proud of that you've maintained, that you're doing. Even if you're just doing it a little bit more, or maybe you're not doing it to the full extent, but you're still doing it on some level. And just doing it on some level is somehow helpful to you. Because what's the alternative? I hope that makes sense. You're always going to beat yourself up for something at some point. But you have to accept also that you can stop doing that immediately after you've acknowledged that you've done it. and this weird thing happens. After a while, you basically stop trusting that automatic critical sounding voice in your head, and you begin to form a habit of, you have this stimulus, negative thought, and the response, the reaction. You begin to learn this reaction. It becomes automatic, aka a habit. By responding to it with a helpful thought, an accurate thought, and most importantly, a meaningful thought. Okay? It's not impossible. Anywho, I hope that makes sense. I hope it wasn't the long way around to get to the point, but sometimes I think I've got to explain myself a little bit, in depth in order to deliver the finished product, you know. Really, I would really appreciate if you're listening to this, and even if I've approached you about talking with me on this thing, to please give it some very serious consideration. I think it would be really helpful. I know I would like to talk with you, and somebody else needs to hear your story. So have a good week. And I would be remiss if I did not sign off with the following reminder that no matter where you've been, no matter what you've done, no matter how difficult it feels, no matter how hopeless you think it is in front of you right now, I promise you, get up tomorrow, put your best foot forward, give it another shot. You can do it. Go get them.